Blog Talk Radio.
Talking Law. Talking Law. Talking Law. Talking Law with Dan Hochheiser.
You can't handle the truth.
Talking Law with Dan Hochheiser analyzes criminal cases in the news, trends in the law, and covers all legal current events.
Overruled.
Our host, criminal defense attorney in New York, Daniel Hochheiser. Each week, Talking Law with Dan Hochheiser features newsmakers, attorneys, media personalities, celebrities, politicians, business people, and so much more. Straight talk. No nonsense. Here's Talking Law with your host, Dan Hochheiser.
April 15th, 2015. Tax day. Not my fault that it's tax day. Hope everybody is getting their taxes in on time. It is 2 years since the awful Boston Marathon bombing. Our condolences go out to the families who lost loved ones in that terrible tragedy and for those who were injured in that horrible terrorist attack 2 years ago. 2 days ago, Jody Arias was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole for the brutal murder of Travis Alexander in Maricopa County, Arizona. Unfortunately, Beth Karras will not be here today. She has the week off, which she deserves. Hopefully, Beth will be back with us next week. Talking Law Radio, as you know, seeks to entertain, educate, and include you in the conversation about the important legal issues of the day and brings you interviews of interesting people every single week. Before we get to today's all-star lineup, I want to thank Beth Karras for filling in for me last week. Last week's show was excellent. A great discussion of forensic evidence featuring attorney Marvin Schechter and Dr. Larry Kobolinski. Check out that show and all our prior shows on blogtalkradio.com/talkinlaw. That's blogtalkradio.com/talkinlaw, or listen on iTunes. And if you're on iTunes, do me a favor, give us a nice rating. That helps us out. Follow me on Twitter at Dan Hochheiser, Hochheiser. Follow me on Twitter at Dan Hochheiser, Hochheiser. What are we going to do today? We are going to do the question of the day. Then we are going to go to Dennis Hoff, owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada. Then we were going to answer the question of the day, and then we will have Frank Piazza, an expert on audio video forensic evidence, join us. Now, for the question of the day, what is the current state of the law in the United States concerning prostitution? Let's introduce Dennis Hoff. Dennis Hoff is a pimp, the owner of legal brothels in Nevada, including the Moonlight Bunny Ranch. He was the star of the HBO series Cat House and is the author of The Art of the Pimp, a love story, one man's search for love, sex, and money. Oh, yeah, yeah, I feel dirty already. Anyway, I'm so happy to have Dennis Hoff, who has
Daddy
been
D,
called
the real American
Daddy
pimp.
D.
If it ain't going down at the Bunny Ranch, it ain't going down at all. No business like hoe business.
Dennis Hoff, who has been called the P.T. Barnum of booty. Dennis, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm there. I'm there. I'm sorry you're feeling dirty, but you must have a lot to hide sexually, huh?
Oh, I don't know. You're gonna have to ask my wife. I hope she's not going to listen to this particular show. No, I'm very excited to have you on, Dennis. This will be a lot of fun. I read your book. Congratulations on the book, The Art of the Pimp. It's really a very interesting read, and it's not just sex, 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 but it's actually a very fascinating story about you, a very interesting man who's had a very interesting career personally, professionally. One thing I was really impressed about in reading the book was that most autobiographies that you read are really self-promotions of people. And your book really took a lot of courage because you included some statements from people who said some very negative things about you, and you even had a psychologist at the end of the book do an assessment of your personality. What drove you to give such an honest account of your life?
Well, you know, with the success of the HBO Cat House show, which is in 27 languages in 64 countries, I mean, it's led me to speak at Oxford University, Trinity College in Dublin, and a month ago, the Sorbonne in Paris, and gave me a platform to fight sex trafficking. Be honest. The secret was it was honest. 14 years ago, there was no reality shows, and I said, no, I want it honest. I want this thing. I'll show what it is. I want to show everything there is, good and bad, and see what the public thinks, because I wanted them to understand what goes on there. So I did the same thing in the book. Now, obviously, there's a girlfriend in there that says some terrible, terrible things, and a lot of them are lies. But it was her frustration because she got dumped. You know, show me a hot chick, and I'll show you a guy that doesn't want to wake up with her in the morning. Well, I'm that guy. And so I allowed everybody to do that, including the psychiatrist. And it hurt my feelings when the psychiatrist says you're a narcissist. But then when I find out that Forbes magazine says most CEOs in America are narcissists, I'm okay with that.
So let's start before the beginning, so to speak. Tell us a little bit about your childhood, how you were raised, who raised you, and where you were raised.
Okay. Mom and Dad were World War II veterans from Chicago. They moved to Phoenix to get out of the cold weather. Dad was a mailman. Mom was a stay-at-home mom, just normal folks and hardworking, no money. And that was how I was raised. I was raised with an Italian mother, which is very tough. German father, who just worked hard every day, and just nice people.
Now, you recite this in the book, and you talk about an encounter during your childhood with Marilyn Monroe, which seems to have had a tremendous effect on your life. Can you tell us a little bit about Marilyn Monroe and what that meeting meant to you?
Yeah, it just really formed my life sexually. And I went to the Arizona State Fairgrounds when I was a kid. Yeah, I was maybe, oh, gosh, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years old. And my grandma took me there and watched the filming of a movie. And there was this beautiful blonde, and she kept looking up and waving at me. And grandma would say, wave back to her. And then finally she came up the steps there with her bodyguards. And grandma said, stand up. So I stood up. She walked up, put her hands on my shoulders, gave me a big kiss with those red lips. And said, you're a handsome young man. And it just really set it in stone. I've been with glammed up blonde centerfolds all my life. And if you look back at the girls I've been with, all of them blonde, all of them beautiful, all of them centerfolds. And so it set that in stone. And the fact to go along with right now, a beautiful, beautiful girl, Chrissy Summers, same look.
How old is Chrissy?
She's 26, University of Michigan graduate, cheerleader.
Boo! I went to the University of Wisconsin. I'm a Badger. What can I tell you?
All right. I'll tell her that. but I love blondes, blue eyes. So anyway, Marilyn Monroe said, I mean, I got so excited. It was unbelievable. I'll never forget that moment.
All right. So you meet Marilyn Monroe, you become, infatuated with, voluptuous blondes, I take it. Although I believe that you're into, thinner women,
yep,
according to the book. In any event, you had some success in the gas station business?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. At a young age, I got into the gas station business and then owned a bunch of them. And then went to, took a vacation to the Reno Lake Tahoe area, and I just fell in love with it. I was in Phoenix and tired of those hot summers, and so I sold everything and then went to northern Nevada. And I was there just a short period of time, and I met a girl and started going out with her. And this girl finally admitted after a few months that she was a working girl, a prostitute. at the Moonlight Ranch. And so I was a little bit shocked, of course, but she said, just be open-minded, come out and take a look. And I went out there on a Sunday night, and I took a look around and met everybody. And then a guy came in, Andy Kaufman, New York guy, and Bob Zamuda, the founder of Comic Relief, went on to found Comic Relief. And we all became buddies and used to hang around there a lot. I had the great times. This is about 76, 77. And about 78, Kaufman said one night, he said, look, he says, we have more fun here than anywhere. Why don't you buy this place and let's treat everybody like you and I are treated, me because I'm a celebrity, you because you're a boyfriend. And boy, that just sunk in. I'm a small businessman. It just fits. So I went to work. We came up with our game plan and wrote all the notes, pages and pages. And finally, he ended up dying in 84. And I had the opportunity to purchase it in 92. And I just went out. It was a sales and marketing exercise from there and turned it into the most famous place in the world.
You're listening to Talkin' Law Radio with Dan Hochheiser. I'm speaking with Dennis Hoff, author of The Art of the Pimp, a love story, one man's search for love, sex, and money. Many of our listeners may know Dennis Hoff from his starring role in the HBO series Cat House. Dennis, so you started in 1992 with your first legal brothel, and you've been in this business for the past, I guess, what, 23 years. And how many brothels do you currently own?
I own seven. The Bunny Ranch has been there since 1955. I bought it in 92. Now, remember, the business was illegal from the 1850s. Virginia City, the Wild West, and Carson City, the Pony Express Trail ran right through the Bunny Ranch. It was tolerated from 8 till 1972. And so it opened in 55, legalized in 72. I found it in 76, and I bought it in 92.
Now, in your brothel is legal. My understanding is that there is both illegal and legal prostitution in Nevada. From your perspective, what are the virtues of legalized prostitution?
Well, I like to equate it to the liquor business. You know, the prohibition, who made the money? The gangsters, the Al Capones, and the politicians that got paid to look the other way. When you legalize that business finally, then it's turned into where there's proper health controls, testing, distribution, age requirements, and taxation that goes with that. The liquor industry paid $6 billion in taxes, federal taxes last year, and the sex business would do the same thing if it was legal. The greatest example probably is the numbers racket. The mob used to make a fortune off the numbers games. Now it's called the California Lotto. And prohibition doesn't work. It hasn't worked with marijuana. You see what's going on there. It's the business is so far off that the drug cartel has now got into heroin distribution and underage sex trafficking.
Now, some people would say that the prostitutes that work at your brothels are victims. Are they victims?
Well, they are victims in the illegal trafficking, absolutely. And sex trafficking is an epidemic proportions in America now. Epidemic. I fight it every day of my life. It's awful. It's disgusting. And it's proliferated with the Internet, because the Internet has made the pimps invisible. Lots of underage trafficking of young girls. If you would Google search sex trafficking in New York, you'll spend a month reading the articles. There'll be millions of articles. It's got to be dealt with, and there's only one way. You can't control the demand. Men and women are going to want to buy sex, and that's it. They want entertainment. They want the intimacy. You can't control the supply, and when you control the supply, then you put in proper testing. We've never had a case of HIV or anything since 1981 when the industry went to condoms. There's never any problems. Where in Las Vegas, where the business is illegal, there's been 1,000 girls arrested working with HIV. So is the system work? You have to control the supply, and the supply, when you do that, who's not invited to the party? The criminals, all these pimps that are out there, they're not invited to that party. They can't pass the test to get in, and they don't have the money. And the other thing is with the girls, underage girls are never going to get into the money ranch because the police department checks their ID to make sure they have positive identification. So you eliminate the drugs, you eliminate the STDs, you eliminate the underage girls, you take the criminals out of the business, and what do you have? Another tax-paying business that generates income instead of negatives with fighting with the vice squad and all that.
What are the specific regulations that you have to comply with to continue to operate your brothel?
Well, it starts at the state level. The state says the business is legal since 1972. It's legal in every county that has a certain amount of people. Now, there's a floating number there. The number is now 700,000. It started at 400,000. So if you have a county that has less than 700,000 people, you can have prostitution if you want to. That leaves out Las Vegas, Clark County. It leaves out Reno and Sparks, which is Washoe Valley in northern Nevada. Now, from there, they say you have to have weekly tests, pre-screened with every girl, and then weekly tests to keep the STDs down. Now the county makes a decision. Of the 15 rural counties, some of them want it, some of them don't, and they put in their own restrictions. One county might say you can work at 18. Another county might say that you have to be 21, and different little idiosyncrasies in each county.
How old do the girls who work for you have to be?
18 in northern Nevada, in Lyon County, where I have four brothels, including the Bunny Ranch. And in southern Nevada, the closest places to Las Vegas, is 21.
Now, the Nevada has banned prostitution in many counties, or in some counties. Some counties it's permitted, as you said. But what they have done to try to limit the business of prostitution is they have prohibited most forms of traditional advertising. How do you run a business without being able to advertise? That seems to me to be a very difficult venture.
Well, it is, and that's the other regulation that I missed. I've dealt with it for so long, I forgot about it. Nevada says you can't advertise, you can't buy any television, you can't buy any radio, you can't buy any newsprint. Now, my way of dealing with it is I come from the Andy Kaufman, Larry Flint, Al Goldstein from Screw Magazine School of Marketing, and it's to do crazy stunts to get out there. Like right now, hopefully today we'll be rolling out our Hookers for Hillary campaign, and it'll bring a lot of national attention. April 1st, New York Daily News released an article about me hiring brothel testers to test the quality of the experience in the room. People didn't know, Fox News, NBC, late night guys didn't know whether it was real or not, but they put it out there. Even Saturday Night Live did a piece on it saying the world famous Bunny Ranch, Dennis Hoff, is hiring brothel quality control testers. The girls will be graded from a scale from F to don't F. A funny line. I mean, it's like a hilarious line. But when Saturday Night Live rips on you, you just made a gigantic marketing score. So that's how I do it. I'm always looking for an angle. I wake up every morning and start doing radio across the country. And I'm also looking at the news between shows. Obama's Secret Service guys get in trouble in Colombia. And I'm on it. I put out a press release. I'm appalled by president. Like, gosh, this is terrible, da 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 da. And I want Secret Service guys to buy American, to not buy the club. Exactly. And so the radio guys get a laugh out of it. The television, late night guys get a laugh out of it. I get exposure and marketing. Because, truthfully, the best customer and the best working girls in America don't know that prostitution is legal in Nevada. And a lot of them haven't heard of the Bunny Ranch. And so it's my job to educate people that we're there 24/7. It's the only place in America that I know of that you can drink, 24 hours a day. You can smoke cigars if you want to, and you can be with pretty girls if that's your desire.
You're listening to Talkin' Law Radio with Dan Hochheiser. I'm speaking to Dennis Hoff, owner of the Moonlight Bunny Ranch in Nevada, author of The Art of the Pimp, the new book that's out. Go get it, read it. It's really fascinating. He has a great story. Dennis, as I was preparing for the show and thinking about this advertising prohibition on that Nevada has that limits the traditional advertising you can do for legal brothels, I thought about the legal profession, and it sort of sounds like the start of a joke, but lawyers were not permitted to advertise their services until reasonably recently. In the 70s, there were a couple lawyers who were suspended in Arizona for advertising, and then the Supreme Court held that it could be done and it was okay, and Jacoby and Myers ran with the ball and became, I think, the first heavy advertisers on television. But it was always frowned upon for lawyers to advertise. It was considered bad form, but it's really must be pretty difficult to operate a business like you do without being able to advertise. But let's switch gears a little bit. Another thing that occurred to me is, you know, the state of Nevada has chosen to ban, well, or the counties have chosen to ban brothels in a number of Nevada counties, and then they've limited the advertising you can do. It seems like they're trying to squeeze the business out of existence. Why, in your opinion, hasn't the state of Nevada followed the state of Rhode Island and amended its law to ban all prostitution across the board?
Well, they haven't done anything since 72. What they do is it's a county by county choice. And the way it started in 72 when it was legalized, the counties that have a lot of gaming in it, like Douglas County, which is Lake Tahoe, they decided they didn't want it because they all thought this family values gaming and this and that, which it didn't work. And now it's back to what happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas. And same way with Carson City, the capital. Well, I'm 1 mile from the county line. And so they thought that, well, we'll keep it out of here. So they haven't tried to shrink the business. Now, the business has shrunk because when I bought the business, my place, first place in 1992, there was 32 brothels. Now there are 18. But it's part of it was this terrible depression, recession that we had in 2008. Killed a lot of business in Nevada, including casinos. So I don't see them trying to cut back on it, but it's not growing. And a lot of it is that because I'm taking the market share. And during the Depression, when my business, Bunny Ranch, went up 5 to 10% a year, most of the brothels were off 50 up to 75%. So I started buying them up. And so I've taken – I'm the Coca-Cola. I'm the Budweiser of sex in Nevada.
Now, when you say you're the Budweiser of sex in Nevada, there's still a lot of illegal prostitution in Nevada while people have a legal option. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Why is it that men continue to patronize illegal prostitutes given the Moonlight Bunny Ranch's availability, the other legal brothels? What's going on there?
Geography. Let's use this analogy. If Manhattan was illegal and Long Island was legal, would the buyers want to go to Long Island? Some of them would. The smart ones would, because they're not going to have any legal troubles in their life, or they're not going to get robbed or extorted or all the terrible things that happen when you deal with criminals. But in Manhattan, that illegal trafficking would grow, and it would be huge. So that's what's happened in Nevada. You've got it illegal in Las Vegas, illegal in Reno. Now there's 228 pages of advertising in the phone book, paying $10,000 a month for escort services. The back pages, people like that who are terrible. In my mind, they're enabling sex trafficking all over America, and they need to be shut down. So it's there. So the legal in Las Vegas, the legal option is 60 minutes away. That's me. So people don't have cars. They can't get away from their wives that long. They've got numerous reasons why they can't come out there. Now, we do good business. Of course, we'd do 100 times that business if we were right in Las Vegas.
Now, Dennis, let's talk about the book because we only have a few minutes left. The Art of the Pimp, A Love Story, One Man's Search for Love, Sex, and Money. First of all, how can people get the book?
You know, I like Barnes & Noble. I think they're a quality company, better than Amazon. So you go there, Books a Million. You can go to MoneyRanch.com, and I'll send it out, and I'll sign it. I'll sign the books. It's an amazing read. It's a Judith Regan book, who's the most amazing publisher ever. And one of the things that I like about it is we gave the book to Robert Grossman, who does all the covers for New Yorker magazine, Atlantic, Rolling Stones, all the caricatures, the cartoons. And Robert did a 32-page comic book just off of the manuscript, and it nails it. It nails my entire life. And people are buying the book. They don't even know me, don't want to know me, but they love Robert Grossman. And so the book is, if Judith Regan was here, she would tell you that it's the most honest book she's ever published. And it is totally, totally honest. And it talks about the inside dealings of the Bunny Ranch, the business model. Every politician should read it. And it's just a fun read.
I agree. I read it. It is a fun read. It's an interesting read. It's not just all about sex. It's also about a very interesting businessman, a very interesting read about a man who is searching for love and has a little difficulty finding it. Dennis, what is not included in the book, The Art of the Pimp, that in hindsight you wish maybe should have been included?
Well, more stories. There's a lot. First of all, we talk about sex. We talk about what goes on in the bedroom because the wives need to know why their husbands keep coming to the Bunny Ranch. So we talk about a lot of that. But it was so rich in content and photographs, literally thousands of photographs of me and celebrities. But there's just not enough room. It's a huge book. It's much bigger than a typical book. It's 353 pages. It's a big book. And so there just wasn't the room to put that in. And I think the pictures, so, you know, pictures is 1,000 words, I think the pictures would have more pictures. There's a lot of pictures, but I think there should have been another 200 or 300 pages of pictures in there.
Now, the book, you know, as I said, it talks about a bunch of different things. It talks about your financial successes, your failed romantic relationships with various women, the psychological assessment. Given everything that's happened in your life, and you're no longer a young man, if I'm not mistaken, are you a success?
Oh, I think I'm a major success, you know. And what I'm focusing on now is what's going to be on my tombstone. And what I want to say is best friend, because I'm very particular about my friends, but I'm a great friend. I wanted to say fought sex trafficking. That's my legacy, because it's a terrible, disgusting blight in America. And world's greatest salesman. You know, I've taken a little brothel in northern Nevada and turned it into the most famous place in the world, evidenced by me speaking at Oxford University and talking to you today.
Well, Dennis, you know, I think you're a man with a lot of courage. I think you are a very successful businessman, and I wish you all the best of luck going forward. I hope you'll come back and talk to us sometime in the future, and I want to thank you in particular for being on the West Coast and waking up early with us.
Well, you're a bright guy, and it's fun to do these interviews, and I think let me just plant a seed down. Half the Starbucks in Manhattan put mini Bunny Ranches there.
Okay, well, you could talk to your hookers for Hillary, I guess, could talk to Hillary about that.
Absolutely.
Dennis, thanks a lot. Take care.
Thanks,
I'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye. Now, we are going to answer the question of the day. The question of the day is, what is the current state of the law in the United States concerning prostitution? Answer, 49 of the 50 states outlaw prostitution. by 2009, amendment, Rhode Island joined every other state in America except for Nevada in completely prohibiting prostitution. Prostitution laws generally fall within the ambit of the state's authority, but the federal government does regulate prostitution activity, which affects interstate commerce through various legal mechanisms, including anti-trafficking statutes. So what is left of legal prostitution in the United States? Nevada remains the only state which still permits some prostitution, as Dennis Hoff discussed. Prostitution is completely illegal in Clark County, which includes Las Vegas, the state's biggest population center and tourist attraction. Street prostitution is illegal in every county in Nevada. Brothels, however, may be operated in sparsely populated counties, as Dennis Hoff said, in counties with populations under 700,000, provided the counties have not chosen to prohibit brothels and various regulations are met, including enforcement of regular medical checkups and mandatory condom use. Even in those Nevada counties in which brothels are permitted, those brothels like Hoff's Moonlight Bunny Ranch are generally prohibited from traditional forms of advertising under Nevada law, which survived a First Amendment challenge in the case of Coyote versus Miller, which can be found at 598 F3rd 592. It's a Ninth Circuit case from 2010. The Ninth Circuit in the Coyote case held that the state of Nevada had a substantial interest in prohibiting the commodification of sex, which was found by the court to be an interest directly advanced by the statute prohibiting certain forms of advertising by legal brothels in Nevada. So although Nevada remains an island in the sea of laws banning prostitution in America, my understanding is that prostitution is still ubiquitous throughout the country, with the lion's share of activity and revenues generated by illegal prostitution, even in Nevada, which has a legal option. Now, we will go to our next guest, Frank Piazza. He is the president of Audio Paint LTD, a New York audiovisual production company which creates and produces audio video content for television, radio, film, and the internet, and also provides forensic audiovisual expert forensic services to the legal profession. Frank has provided expert forensic testimony in various state and federal courts in New York. Check out Frank Piazza's website at www.legalaudio.com to check out his company's services they can provide. Now, without further ado, Frank Piazza, are you with me?
Good morning, Dan.
How are you today?
I'm fine, thank you.
I hear you great. Thanks for joining us.
I appreciate that.
You heard a little bit of our show so far. We've been talking about prostitution, so I figured we'd just close that circle, so to speak. Tell us, are there special issues that you can help an attorney with who is defending a prostitution case, a sex trafficking case, a child pornography prosecution?
You know, that's a good opening question, Dan. You know, as I really think about the cases I get involved in ones that I'm comfortable working with, which is most cases, those particular areas are actually cases I kind of step to the side on. It's just kind of it happens the way it does, and sometimes the quality and of the evidence that I'm viewing and working with is something I'm not comfortable with. But you know, I think that audio and video, that component in these cases, is present in all cases, and I could probably, you know, be very specific. You know, if it's about a prostitution case or a pornography case, I think my role is still the same regardless of what the case is.
I actually tried a promoting prostitution case up in Dutchess County a few years ago, and that whole prosecution was essentially based on undercover recordings of conversations with my client and the co-defendant, And I won the case. I got an acquittal. And I think perhaps the prosecution would have been could have used services like yours to enhance some of those recordings, some of which were difficult to hear. But in any event, let's talk about the recent police killings, which, as everybody knows, have been captured on smartphone video. And we're talking about the situation in Staten Island with the choking death of Eric Garner. There was the shooting of Tamir Rice in Cleveland. And more recently, we had the killing of Walter Scott, who was shot in the back several times in South Carolina by a police officer. How has the smartphone changed the landscape in these police homicide investigations?
Well, the smartphone has become so prevalent in so many cases now that you have to really recognize that who's ever recording it and how they recorded it. I think right off the bat, like, for example, I did some commentary last week on this Scott Warren case on CNN, and it was really, it's judged in the public very differently, as you know this, as things are judged in the courts. When you really get down to the facts and the layers and you start getting underneath, you know, how it was recorded, was it an authentic recording? Was there any sort of highlighting done, you know, by the TV station? Again, you know, TV stations or broadcast areas have the ability to really tell their story the way they want to tell it. So specifically, smartphones bring a new challenge when it comes to authenticity, how it was actually recording the event. And what I mean by that is, you know, we all know what apps are. And you can download third-party apps, and they record and archive materials a very different way than just the phone app that you might have. I mean, with a typical iPhone, just using, you know, what's in the phone at when you buy it. You know, if you take a third-party app and start recording audio and video, it does things many times very differently in a certain protocol, different than just your, you know, okay, I turn the phone on record, now I've recorded, I'm done. It's not always like that. So that smartphone, getting back to your initial question, has some challenges, but, you know, it's sort of, it has to be approached a little differently.
And this, you're listening to Talkin' Law Radio with Dan Hochheiser. I'm speaking with Frank Piazza, who is an expert in forensic audio video evidence. He has a website at legalaudio.com. Frank, what does it mean to be an expert in forensic audio visual evidence?
You know, my answer would be this. You know, my role is to help you, the attorney or the prosecutor, help manage and present, you know, your audio and video evidence. And, you know, on a general term, you know, there are services I offer in what managing and presenting means. Again, enhancement, we're all very familiar with that. Both audio and video, of course. There might be image extraction, pulling out single frames out of the video and creating newer exhibits and having the ability to really zero in on certain details. Authentication is a very big piece in my work, you know, determining whether or not a piece of evidence might have been edited or altered, or the word a lot of times people use is tampered, and in looking into what might or might not be the case with something like that might have been edited or tampered. There are two different approaches. There's the linear kind of audio or video playback approach from beginning to end and seeing if there's a consistency from beginning to end. That's one area we look at. Another area where we look at the metadata, the digital information in the file that no one ever really knows is there. And that tells us information about the file and how it was recorded and whether or not stops and starts, things of that nature might have occurred. So I hope I've answered your question there.
Yes, absolutely. You're listening to Talkin' Law Radio with Dan Hochheiser. I'm speaking to Frank Piazza about forensic audio visual evidence. Now, Frank, in my cases, we do defense of homicide cases and such, and these days, especially in the post 9/11 world, it seems like where I work in New York City, the whole city has surveillance cameras, and you get a new case, and all of a sudden you have 13 different angles of video surveillance, which didn't used to be the case not so long ago. How has this increased availability of surveillance footage changed your job and the way you can help attorneys defend or prosecute their cases?
Yes, and there are more cameras coming too, and the quality of those cameras hopefully is getting better as well. It's playing a huge role. You know, the volume that's out there now being recorded and dealing with it. I mean, just, you know, as a, from a business point of view, from my end, it creates more opportunity for me because I don't know what the exact percentages are, but I would say probably in a lot of the criminal cases in New York, probably 80% have this component of audio and video. I mean, it's happening. And when the cop cam issue starts to take place and becomes more of a mainstream part of cases, that's going to create a whole new area of challenges for, you know, analyzing audio and video. And, you know, the surveillance part of it or the security cameras, you know, I'd like to make a distinction between the two a little bit. Security cameras being cameras that might be mounted on, you know, in hallways or on the sides of buildings, usually privately owned and operated. That's not true with all the sitting house projects. They have their security cameras as well. And then there's surveillance where the actual cameras were used as part of an event. You know, they were planned to use to capture an event, you know, ahead of time. So, yeah, the volume of cameras in the city is creating a huge opportunity. It, you know, making it a component you have to deal with now as attorneys, pretty much on an everyday basis.
Frank, we have about a minute left. What failings do you see or opportunities do you see attorneys missing who have cases which have audiovisual evidence? And do you see attorneys who make common mistakes where they don't seize on an opportunity where somebody like you could help them?
Wow. I think that I see attorneys get frustrated when they're handed materials, especially video materials, by a DA or maybe the Fed, federal prosecutors, where they're having trouble actually playing it in their computers, opening it up. I mean, it seems like, you know, a quick phone call to the DA and say, I'm having trouble with this video. Could you please help me? And the answers are usually not timely. And I think they get frustrated and they feel that if they can't open it, that it slows down maybe their momentum. So whether or not there is a standard that every DA or every prosecutor has to go by to make sure you, the attorney, has an easy job opening these materials, I don't know if that's going to get created. But there are so many software, so many recording systems, so many different ways that...
Frank, I'm sorry, but we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. Frank Piazza, if you want to retain Frank's services, you can call him at 212-873-8772. Email him at info@legalaudio.com. I want to thank Dennis Hoff. I want to thank Frank Piazza, legalaudio.com, my producer Mark Goldman, who always does such a great job for us. Our next show will be Wednesday at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. Don't miss it. Follow me on Twitter at Dan Hochheiser, HOCHHEISER. Like our Facebook page, facebook.com/talkinglaw. Check out our prior shows on blogtalkradio.com/talkinglaw or on iTunes. I want to wish everybody peace and justice. Take care.